Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Diane will be back tomorrow. The Federal Communications Commission argues that easy access to a high-speed internet connection is no longer a luxury but a necessity of modern life. Today, the FCC proposes a series of steps to expand residential high-speed internet access and lower the costs. Joining me in the studio to talk about the proposal and its implications for consumers and the telecommunications industry, Ben Scott, Policy Director of Free Press, and Adam Thier of the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
First, we're going to talk for a few minutes with Blair Levin. He's Executive Director of the FCC's Broadband Initiative, and he joins us by phone. Mr. Levin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, tell us just briefly, what are the FCC's goals in laying out this new plan?
Well, what the FCC attempted to do at the direction of Congress was to write a plan that would accomplish a number of things. First, it would make sure that broadband is delivered everywhere in the country. Second, it would make sure that broadband was affordable to everyone. And third, that it would make sure that broadband is used to serve a number of national purposes, including improving education, healthcare, providing for energy savings. Broadband is an extraordinary platform that really is changing the way we do business in this country, the way we live our lives, the way we get and exchange information. And Congress wanted to make sure that that was a platform that was available to all and affordable to all.
So how many Americans now do not have access to high-speed broadband at home?
Well, I think there are two different sets. The first set is the 7 million American homes, approximately 14 million Americans, who don't have access to broadband even if they wanted to use it. That is to say, the networks, and this is a largely a rural phenomenon, do not extend to these homes. The second set is approximately 93 million Americans who don't have broadband in their homes. We did an extensive study about why that is. Obviously, the most critical reason is the affordability. These largely low-income folks who can't afford it, but there are also those who lack the digital skills necessary to use it. There are some who see it's not relevant. There are some who feel that their personal information isn't secure on it, so they don't want to use it. So there's a variety of different issues affecting usage.
And how does that compare with the situation in other countries?
Well, I think each country, we did do extensive studies of other countries. I would say that there really isn't a good apples-to-apples comparison. When broadband started off, we were the leader, but over the last, say, decade, we're now, you know, depending on the studies you use, somewhere in the second tier in terms of adoption. But there are a variety of different metrics that you could look at. There are some countries that have much faster networks. And in some ways that's troubling, but in other ways it's not as troubling as it has been portrayed. I think the critical issue is, does the American public have networks capable of utilizing the most important applications rather than whether we have the absolute fastest? And part of the goal of the plan is to make sure that we do get a network upgrade so we can use the great applications that are bound to come out of the great, tremendous minds that are currently working at Silicon Places and around the world to build applications.
So if this plan were put into effect, what would the impact that Americans would see themselves in their lives? What difference would it make?
Well, I think you have to look at the plan holistically. There are a couple of hundred different recommendations that go to the wide variety of topics that Congress asked us to talk about. So that, for example, I think that what you could look for in the plan, one of the things that we really focused a lot on is making sure that spectrum is better utilized for mobile broadband. And that's both in the short term, where we're going to free up some spectrum or change the rules to make sure that the spectrum isn't not being utilized, and in the longer term, where we are concerned about what you might think of as a spectrum crunch, running out of spectrum, which would cause all of the mobile broadband uses to be more expensive and for the service quality to be worsened. Hopefully we're going to avoid that crisis. But there are a number of other ways that people will see the impact. hopefully our kids going to school won't be carrying around backpacks with 25 pounds of outdated textbooks, but rather will be using digital content and e-readers that can give a much better educational experience. Hopefully, remote monitoring of patients and other ways of utilizing telecommunications for healthcare services will improve healthcare. Hopefully, within a few years, we'll have a public safety network that serves all of our first responders and helps save lives. That's the power of a robust broadband network to improve the performance of various sectors that the government plays a key role in is a very important part of this plan.
How much of this plan can the FCC simply implement on its own, and how much requires, say, action by Congress?
About half of the recommendations of the plan go to the FCC itself, and so a lot of the core recommendations really are about what the FCC does. The large bulk of the rest of the recommendations actually go to the executive branch, various cabinet agencies and others to better utilize broadband to achieve their missions. There's a relatively small number of things, but nonetheless important things that Congress needs to do.
Now, there is, though, a court case, I gather, brought by Comcast that challenges the FCC's authority over broadband services. I mean, if you lose that court case, could it make this plan very difficult for you to move ahead on?
Well, the part of the planning effort is to really focus on kind of what's the strategic direction? What are the choices that need to be made to move the country in the right way? Our attitude throughout this plan was that if we can identify key things that need to be done, and we get people to agree that that's what needs to be done, we'll worry about the jurisdiction after. The jurisdiction question, it's a very critical question, and I know both your guests, Ben and Adam, are going to have different points of view about that. But from the perspective of the plan, that's a question best addressed when you're actually doing what's called the notice and comment period for the FCC. It's not as much a planning issue as it is a legal and policy issue. There's a good time to do that. That'll be when the FCC actually implements the suggestions, the recommendations of the plan.
You talked about the need to reassign part of the spectrum to allow greater use by mobile devices and,
yes,
and mobile networks. Now, the broadcasters are not happy about this, I guess. Do you think they'll go along with reallocating some of the spectrum that is now assigned to them?
We think that what Congress needs to do is give the FCC tools to provide incentives for some broadcasters to go along. I think the issue, and it's unfortunately, I think some of the broadcasters have exaggerated what we're really asking for here. What this country needs is for a small number of broadcasters in a small number of big cities to volunteer to lessen the amount of spectrum they use, which would have the effect of freeing up a huge amount of spectrum nationwide. That's going to eventually be very important for the country because the mobile broadband platform is probably the most important platform for job growth, for competitiveness, for innovation that we're going to have in this decade. And if we run out of spectrum, it's going to have a very negative consequence for the economy and for consumers. But we think that if we have the right incentive structures in the auctions, we're going to get that small number of broadcasters. By the way, in the big cities, there are lots of broadcast stations. We don't need all of them to volunteer in this way, but we think with the right incentive structures, enough will do it so that we can move forward.
And if broadcasters will not voluntarily do this because of incentives you offer them, do you have the power to just take it away from them?
Actually, the FCC does have that power, but I don't think it'll come to that. I think that for a variety of reasons, including the fundamental economics of that business, as well as what we're really asking as opposed to what sometimes the broadcasters say we're asking for, I think we're going to be able to achieve what we set out to do.
Blair Levin, he's executive director of the FCC's Broadband Initiative. We have to let him go. He's on his way up to the Hill to talk to members of Congress about this plan. Thanks so much for being
Susan,
with us.
Thank you very much.
Let me turn now to our guests in the studio, Ben Scott from Free Press and Adam Thier from the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Ben, what do you think about this FCC plan?
Well, I think in the broad strokes, it's a very good start and a very important turn towards really embracing broadband, not as a commercial service that we have for entertainment, but as an infrastructure that we use for our everyday lives, our economic lives, our social lives, our political lives. I think it's very important that the SEC has embarked on this plan. I think there are a lot of tough choices they're going to have to make ahead, and we'll look forward to working on all those specific issues.
Adam, do you agree? Is this, generally speaking, a step in the right direction?
Well, it's certainly an ambitious plan. This is like anything I've unseen in 20-plus years of covering telecommunications and broadband policy issues. Perhaps a tad bit too ambitious for my taste, because we could be embarking on a very comprehensive sort of industrial policy for broadband and the Internet that personally makes me a little bit uncomfortable. Government's track record of trying to build out high-tech and sophisticated, fast-moving networks is not a very good one. And I'm personally dismayed by a couple of the more regulatory prescriptions that we find in this plan, because some of the things at the margin I have no problem with in terms of incentivizing more access for homes that don't have access right now, so on and so forth. But the more complicated, the more regulatory stuff that's in there, that's going to engender a lot of controversy.
Been too much government involvement here?
Well, I don't think that's too a fair critique at this point. I think they're identifying all the problems in this 300-page-plus plan. They've analyzed each of the areas that have needs, where people are disconnected, where speeds are low, where prices are too high, and they've put on the table some recommendations. We'll see how they implement those recommendations. I don't think it's about less government or more government. It's about government that works.
We're talking about the FCC's ambitious plan to build a new digital infrastructure for the country. We're going to take your calls and questions after we return after a short break. You can call our toll-free line, 1-800-433-8850. Our phone lines are open. You can send us an email at drshow@wamu.org, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We're talking about the FCC plan, which goes to Congress this morning, that proposes big changes in the digital infrastructure of the country, an effort to provide high-speed Internet access at home for everyone across the United States. We're joined now by Dennis Wharton of the National Association of Broadcasters. Dennis Wharton, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's great to be on, and it's great to be on with Ben and Adam, two old friends of mine.
Now, we just heard from Blair Levin, executive director of the FCC's Broadband Initiative, who described the voluntary action he wants some broadcasters taking, giving back some of the spectrum for use by mobile networks. And I wonder, what do you think about that?
Well, we plan to work with the FCC and Congress to help them solve the problem. In our view, broadcasting and broadband are not mutually exclusive ideas. These are compatible technologies. It's important to remember that broadcasters just 9 months ago gave back over a quarter of the spectrum that we use, 108 megahertz of spectrum, when we transitioned from analog to digital television. So in our view, we fully support the bill that's moving through Congress very quickly to get a full accounting of where spectrum is being used, and then we can address other issues going forward. But we're going to be supportive of this effort. Broadband is important. Broadcasting is important. And we've got nothing against new technology. Broadcasters have some of the most popular websites in their communities. We were the original wireless technology, if you will. Wireless before wireless was cool.
Well, that sounds pretty conciliatory. Does that mean that some broadcasters in big cities, as Blair Levin suggested, will be willing to voluntarily give up parts of the spectrum for these other uses?
You know, if it's truly voluntary, sure. You know, sometimes in Washington, the word voluntary has different connotations. I mean, a lot of these broadcasters in big cities are offering niche programming services like foreign language stations, religious stations. But sure, if it's truly voluntary, I don't think we'll have a problem. But some of the proposals that have come out in the last day or so, after we were told this was going to be voluntary, indicate that it's not truly voluntary.
What do you mean? What's not voluntary?
Well, there's a proposal to put forward that's in some of the trades today. Trade publications suggesting that six channels will be taken away from broadcasters on an involuntary basis. We're going to study that, but we want to be conciliatory because we think this is an important public policy issue.
So, if this plan goes forward, what difference would consumers see when it comes to broadcasting?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know exactly because, I mean, first off, this is the first step in a marathon. There's going to be there are already congressional hearings planned. There's going to be a series of rulemakings by the FCC. You know, remember that broadcasters just spent tens of billions of dollars, or consumers rather, spent tens of billions of dollars on new high-definition television sets. We worked with the government to transition from analog to digital television under the presumption that broadcasters could be a real player in this mobile DTV, digital television platform. Just in the next year, you're going to see broadcasters offering live and local digital television on handheld devices, and laptops, in the back seats of cars. So broadcasters, we think, have a very important future. And because we are a one-to-many communications technology service which means that local TV stations can get information to the masses faster than any other communications service. We think we're an important player and by far the most efficient user of spectrum. Some of our competitors, cell phones and the internet, by contrast, are one-to-one communication services. That's why you saw cell phone connections crash on the mall during the Obama inaugural. The system was simply strained to the point where calls and videos could not be delivered. Now, I can't think of the last time a local television service crashed, and that's why we argue that we are the most efficient users of spectrum.
Dennis Wharton of the National Association of Broadcasters, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk just to one more guest before we go back to our panel in the studio. That's Chris Gutman-McCabe, who also joins us by phone. He's Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for CTIA, the Wireless Association. Chris, thank you for being with us.
Sure. Good morning, Susan. Thanks for having me.
You know, the National Association of Broadcasters representatives sounded like this is something that could easily be worked out. Is that your view? Do you think this is going to be not such a contentious process in reallocating some of the spectrum?
Well, I would have to say this is a great start to the morning if we have the National Association of Broadcasters and Dennis suggesting that this can be accomplished in relatively short order. I think that's a fantastic start to the launch of the broadband plan.
Are you skeptical?
I'm cautiously optimistic, I would say. I'm very hopeful that we can sort of bring to fruition the plan that the chairman and Blair Levin and his team have put in place with regard to spectrum, sort of setting the foundation for a real continued evolution and revolution in the mobile space.
So if this plan goes forward, as the FCC is outlining it, what would that mean to just a regular consumer, somebody who's got a cell phone, watches TV? How much difference would they see in their lives?
Well, from the mobile perspective, think of what has happened in the last 18 months. When 18 months ago, the Motorola Razr was the hottest-selling handset in the United States, and since then we've seen three iPhones and five BlackBerry phones, and about a half dozen Google phones, and we've seen the Amazon Kindle and the Apple iPad and the Barnes and Noble Nook and smart grid applications and telehealth and inventory management. I mean, the list goes on and on. What this plan does is make sure that the foundation is in place for this continued explosion in the development in the ecosystem, is what we call it, in wireless. And To me, that means, you know, the ability to continue to see smarter and faster networks, better handsets, more and more intense applications, and basically sort of laying the groundwork so that, as Pew and others have estimated, so that when we get to 2020 and mobile devices are the primary internet devices for access throughout the world, in the United States, we're leading the world instead of trailing.
And you said smarter and faster mobile devices. How about cheaper ones? Will this affect the prices that people pay for their service?
Well, certainly. And I think you heard Blair talk about this before. Without this spectrum, you're going to see probably, you know, greater price, higher prices and greater congestion on the network. So, you know, I think this will help to facilitate what has happened in the last 10 years, which is every year the price per minute continues to go down, pretty much without exception.
Now, one other point, just one last question. Dennis Wharton made the point that broadcasting is one to many so that you can get information out to a lot of people, especially in an emergency, whereas mobile service is one to one. And that's, he said, that was why the systems got overwhelmed during the inauguration here in 2009. What do you say to that? Does that mean that broadcast really needs to be protected?
Well, first of all, I think free over-the-air television is a service that will continue. There's nothing in the plan that suggests that it shouldn't continue. But also, to get to Dennis's specific point, I did not see anyone out on the mall carrying their television with them. And so the reality is that our devices are mobile. They're to the person. They give you a level of access that you can't get in any of the other broadband services, and you can't get from television. And they are becoming our primary safety device. So in addition to access to broadband, they're becoming our primary safety device. And so I think what Blair and the chairman and the folks at the FCC are going to try to do is lay a foundation to make sure that the U.S., which I believe is currently leading the world, all of those phones I announced before were launched first in the U.S., and they're devices made by multinational companies. I think what they're trying to do is lay the foundation for that, and we're not suggesting that there shouldn't be free over-the-air television, and I don't think there's anything along those lines in the plan. What we're suggesting is in areas like D.C., where 13 of the 49 channels are being used, 78 out of the 300 megahertz that's been allocated to broadcasters is being used in D.C., there needs to be some rationalization. There needs to be a new look at how to use some of that spectrum.
Chris Gutman-McCabe, he's Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for CTIA, the Wireless Association. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you, Susan.
Let me turn back to our panel here in the studio, Ben Scott with Free Press and Adam Thier with the Progress and Freedom Foundation. So we've heard from the FCC, we've heard from the National Association of Broadcasters, and we've heard from the Wireless Association. What did you hear that struck you as surprising?
Well, I think one thing that we all agree on is that America needs more spectrum. Everyone agrees on that. The question is where we're going to get it. And the reason this is so central to the broadband plan, this question about what to do with the broadcast spectrum, is because a huge chunk of the spectrum is owned by broadcasters currently, and a lot of people would like to get that and reallocate it for other services. The broadcasters, of course, don't necessarily like the sound of that. Getting an eviction notice from the government is not something that excites them, and they're going to fight that, I think, for the most part. But what
you mean despite the very conciliatory tone that Dennis Wharton took?
Well, I think he's taking the right tone because there are hopeful signs, I think, in the broadband plan that the FCC is willing to make a deal, to make the broadcasters potentially a deal they can't refuse. But at the end of the day, that deal is going to require cold, hard cash to get the broadcasters to vacate that spectrum, because if the government just tries to take it all back without any compensation, they're in for a huge legal fight and a delay in the plan.
Ben Scott, what did you think about what we've heard?
Well, I think it might be helpful for me to spend a minute just breaking this down for your listeners who may not be as familiar as we are with the arcana of FCC regulatory policy. And when we talk about reallocating the television spectrum, the way to think about that is, you know, go in your living room, unplug your cable, pop some bunny ear antennas on top of your TV, and start tooling around with your remote control. And what you'll find is that between channels 2 and about 50, those are the ones that are allocated for broadcast TV. In most markets, only about a dozen of those are used. In rural markets, it's even smaller. In some of the largest television markets like Washington and New York, it's a few more. What the FCC is talking about doing is saying, okay, if only a dozen or 15 of the television stations out of 50 are being used, can't we reclaim some of those? And then they've gone and they've analyzed it, and they said, okay, well, some of them need to be left empty to have space between stations so they don't interfere with one another. And they've decided, well, we think if we just rejigger the way they're all set up on the dial, we can free up six of those channels and reallocate them immediately. That's what Dennis was talking about. That would be involuntary. They would take six of those, but those would be six that no one's using today. And they think they can incentivize, that's a Washington word for bribe, broadcasters who are currently broadcasting on those channels to get off in exchange for a percentage of the revenues that would come from auctioning the licenses to those broadcast stations to wireless companies like AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile. And that's really what we're talking about. And that's, I think, the guts of this debate, which is, when would that happen and what would it look like and would it really lower prices and would it create competition and who would get this spectrum if it's the broadcasters who are going to turn it loose? Those are the critical questions that the plan tees up and that we're going to spend the next half decade or more fighting over.
How big a change is this on the part of the FCC compared with the FCC's attitude and actions during the Bush administration?
Well, there is certainly a change in tone about some of the regulatory side of this debate about what sort of regulations we should have in place governing telecommunications and broadband networks. And in the broadband plan, we see some language about the FCC potentially reconsidering some rules that were changed under the Bush administration having to do with whether or not network providers should share their networks on a wholesale basis. And that's a complicated way of basically saying, should the government be regulating networks or not? And that's going to be, I think, a core debate going forward for the broadband plan.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. You know, we're getting already a lot of emails from people from rural areas. And here's an example of a comment that others are making as well. This person writes, rural areas have been left behind. I work in the IT industry, but I have to drive 30 minutes from my home to find something other than a dial-up connection. Plus, I cannot get cell phone service within a five-mile radius. Even if we just had broadband in our local library, that would be an improvement. So how many people find themselves in this situation where they simply have whatever the cost, it's not an issue of cost, it's just that there's not high-speed internet access available to them?
I think Blair put the number at about 9 million. The numbers that I have seen range from about 4 to 6% of homes in America find themselves in exactly the position of that emailer. They live in a rural America, and they simply don't have a broadband connection to buy at any price. And that is a core part of this plan is expanding the universal service program that we currently have for telephone service. I'll bet that person who wrote that email has telephone service to their home. That's because decades ago we decided as a country that telephone service was a critical infrastructure and we would do whatever it took to bring a copper wire telephone service to everybody in America. And when the market didn't provide for that, the government invested in those technologies. We have now, in this plan, made that turn for broadband, and we've decided we're going to put the dollars into rural America to make sure that everybody's connected to that network so that they can have access to the services that plug them into 21st century information economy.
Adam, do you agree that the time has come for the government to basically guarantee high-speed internet access to Americans wherever they live? Rural areas, urban areas, whatever?
I think the most important part of this plan is addressing that problem of the unwired, unmet need homes that don't have any access right now to high-speed services. If the plan was solely focused on that narrow problem, I think that would be something that's laudable. I think the problem is the plan goes well beyond that and talks about a lot of other things and a lot of other types of approaches and policies and regulatory mandates that I think are going to encumber this sort of effort to meet those unmet needs in homes.
So tell me, how much would this plan cost and where would the FCC get the money to pay for the initiative?
Well, the plan does take up that question. And what they say is, while true, a little bit of sleight of hand. What they've said is, if we're successful in taking back the spectrum from Dennis and the broadcasters and Congress changes the law and lets us auction it off and give a portion to the broadcasters so that they go away happy, that will be so much money that will easily offset the costs of bringing broadband to rural America and building a network for public safety. Those things, that may well happen. Congress may well earmark some of that money and give it to the FCC to accomplish those goals. If they don't, the commission will have to fend for themselves. They'll have to get the money in other ways How that happens remains to be seen. You know, everybody who pays a phone bill in a city these days can find a line item that says USF or Universal Service Fund, a buck and a half or so. And that's the money that goes into a big fund that goes to rural broadband. And that is a big source of money that the commission is likely to tap in order to achieve many of the goals in the plan.
You'd tap that money, but you'd be using it for slightly different purposes.
That's right.
So people who are responding, depending on it for its current purpose, might not be happy about that.
Well, the goal here is to transition it so that over time, if I'm paying for a broadband connection to your home, that same wire will also bring you a phone service. So the subsidy that used to go to telephone service can be transitioned to broadband without implicating or necessarily canceling your phone service.
Adam.
Well, Ben's got it right when he says sleight of hand. I mean, there's some really creative accounting techniques underway here. I mean, when the FCC says that the plan will be revenue neutral, if not revenue positive, direct quote, I find that astonishing because they're basing that entire claim on this notion that they're going to get back enough of that spectrum from the broadcasters that we talked about and then get enough money out of that deal when they auction it that it'll cover everything they want with these hundreds of recommendations in this plan. I just find that to be a fantastic proposition that is not going to occur.
Adam Thier, he's with the Progress and Freedom Foundation, and we're also joined in the studio by Ben Scott from Free Press. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to go to the phones. We've got some great callers waiting. Please hold on. We'll be back with you soon. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. By Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing. ConstantContact.com. And by Cabot Creamery Cooperative, five generations of New England and New York farm families working together to produce naturally aged traditional Vermont cheddar cheese. This is NPR.
Humans aren't the only beings that communicate, feel emotions, and have self-awareness. Drawing on the latest research, an animal behaviorist says that we need to change the way we treat other living creatures. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. You know, the Diane Rehm Show has such a great audience, and as evidence of that, we have a caller just on one of our regular phone call-in lines who'd like to join us. It's Congressman Cliff Stearns. He's the ranking Republican on the subcommittee in the House that oversees the FCC. He's a congressman from Florida. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
Susan, I'm very glad to be on, and thanks for taking my call.
Now, you have a comment you'd like to make.
Well, the program started off saying I think 95 million Americans don't have broadband, and then I think later on you pointed out that the FCC has confirmed that 95% of the households in America have broadband. So what we're left with, about 7 million households that don't have it. So I think the end goal, which the FCC and Congress both support, is trying to get ubiquitous broadband, and also high speeds, because a lot of countries have higher speeds than we do. Nevertheless, what concerns me is that the FCC report has a lot of language on it in it that perhaps is going to increase regulation of the Internet. Also, it's going to increase their jurisdiction. And so I've written a letter, I think you folks and others should know, to Chairman Jenikowski expressing my concerns about this. But the other thing I wanted to point out, you might talk about, is who were the people that helped the FCC develop this plan? It has not been transparent. And how much money, more importantly, did they spend in preparing it? You know, we'd like to know, and hopefully the new chairman would provide this information. In fact, I've sent a letter to him asking 9 questions about this, because I think a lot of us want to know what is the implementation of this and how was it developed and how much money they spent. I mean, I think these are fair questions. At the same time, I think we should concentrate on the 7 million households that don't have it without making everybody alarmed that, you know, the free market didn't work, because in a larger sense, the free market worked, and it's almost ubiquitous.
But I guess he was making the point that you're quite right that many of these households have access, but either cost is a barrier or lack of comfort with using the Internet is a barrier. Do you think these are issues that the government should address, trying to drive down the cost and kind of educate people so that they're more likely to see this as something they want to be using?
Well, I think education is extremely important. I think that's fine. But I think the cost of the broadbands should come down with more competition. And that's why I worry that if we put more net regulation, then the broadband companies who are putting down the fiber optics will not make the capital investment until they see what this regulation involves. So this new FCC report has me a little bit concerned, because the way to bring costs down is through competition. For example, televisions, example, iPods, talking about all kinds of new wireless devices, from the BlackBerry to the Trio to the iPod, iPhone. So all this came about because the cost came down, and that's way to get those people that for some reason think is too expensive or too cumbersome through education, but also let the market work.
And Congressman Stearns, just one last question. How much of this plan do you think the FCC can just go ahead and implement, and how much is Congress going to have a say over, and where concerns like yours could be raised in a way that that perhaps prevents some of these elements from being implemented?
Well, I think Congress is going to have we're bringing the commissioners up. I think next week we're having a hearing. I think that's a very good question. I think anything involving jurisdiction should come to Congress and not the FCC on the Internet. We should have some say on it so that the people have response and participation. And then secondly, I think that the FCC has to be transparent on how they developed, who developed it, was there a conflict of interest, and how much did it cost the taxpayers.
All right. Congressman Cliff Stearns from Florida, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Susan.
Let me go back to our panel. Ben Scott, what did you think about what we heard from the congressman?
Well, I think he's being a little unfair. The question of why is the FCC focused on adoption and affordability and speed is because the law tells them to focus on those questions. This plan didn't come out of thin air. It was ordered up in the stimulus bill passed by the Congress. It was budgeted by the stimulus bill. The amount of money they spent on it was in that act as well. So I think, you know, the reasons for those are pretty clear. I think the second point of why focus on adoption and affordability, well, those are the key goals for bringing people to the network. You don't get economic and social benefit just by having a wire go by somebody's house. You get it by having them adopt the service. And that's where, you know, government has traditionally been involved in infrastructure services. And finally, on his point of let's let competition do the work, you know, this report plainly shows that 96% of American households have at best 2 choices for broadband, telephone company and cable company. The last I checked my economics textbook, that was not robust competition. So in the absence of competition, what government has traditionally done in markets like this is try to promote more competition, and that is exactly what the FCC's plan attempts to do.
Adam.
So this is where Ben and I have a fairly serious disagreement because, is the glass half empty or half full? I mean, the fact is with 95-96% of Americans having some broadband choices out there, that's a pretty impressive thing right now. You know, broadband's an expensive undertaking, and our private carriers since 2003 or 4 when they were deregulated have been investing somewhere in the order of $60 to $65 billion per year in upgrading and innovating in these high-speed networks. That's a big deal. America's a big country. I hear a lot of comparisons in this debate, I think quite unfairly, to other countries like South Korea. Why can't we be more like South Korea? Well, South Korea is basically the size of my home state of Indiana. You know, if America was busy wiring Indiana and that was the only thing we had to do, we would have had that done already, right? And, you know, we have to be patient. It's going to take some time. America's a big, diverse country with a lot of areas that are hard to reach. Let's try to find a way to reach those harder to reach places.
Although I got to tell you, we're getting a lot of emails from people who are complaining about the cost of high-speed service. Now, Tyler writes us from Huntington, West Virginia. He says, I live in the largest urban area in a primarily rural state, that'd be West Virginia. The only broadband option for my neighborhood is cable internet through Comcast. If you only want broadband and don't bundle other services with it, the monthly fee is $62.99 per month, plus fees and taxes. The service is not particularly fast or reliable, but it's the only option available. He says he lived in Denmark, and for $36 a month, he could get broadband at more than twice as fast as he can get here in West Virginia. Does that seem like a high cost to you, $62.99 a month? Is that a cost that seems reasonable?
Well, I don't know exactly what the right cost of broadband is. I mean, obviously, the lower the better. I think we could all agree. But the fact of the matter is, I think we're only going to get that by having serious head-to-head facilities-based competition among competing carriers. I don't think we should resign ourselves to the idea that we need to go back to the era of regulated monopoly and a single provider and a sort of public option for broadband. I'd prefer to have competition run its course and give it a chance.
Well, is that what the FCC is talking about, a public option for broadband that would be government-run?
Well, the FCC at this point is laying out goals and first steps. And the goals are bold. The goals are we're going to think about broadband as an infrastructure, and we're going to make sure everybody has a reasonably comparable level of service at a reasonably comparable price. So if I live in Washington, D.C., and I can have, you know, 50 megabits of broadband speed for $44 a month, then our friend in Huntington, West Virginia ought to be able to get the same thing. Think about the comparison in the electricity market. We wouldn't tolerate it if on the East Coast and the metro areas we had great electrical service, but there were rolling brownouts through West Virginia and Ohio because you happen to live in a state that's less populated. Now, we've decided that as a country, infrastructure is going to be available to everyone at about the same standards for about the same prices. And that's the real challenge here because there are huge divisions between what is available to people and how much it costs based on where they live.
All right, let's go to the phones and let some of our listeners join our conversation. We'll go to Andy calling us from Atlanta. Andy, hi. Thanks for joining.
Hi there. I'd like to first thank the congressman for calling in. I'm glad to see there's somebody keeping an eye on the FCC. I think they already have too much power, and I hope someone focuses on the fine print of this plan and so they don't gain more power and more, can throw their weight around for the communication industries like, you know, radio and TV. But I was wondering, I had a question for the panel, which broadcasters is this going to affect? I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I listen to my satellite radio all day, and I'm wondering, is this going to affect TV, radio, and satellite radio also?
All right, Andy, thanks for calling us. We're glad you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show as you drive across the country.
No, this will have no effect, as far as I can tell, on satellite radio for truckers. I don't think that's something that the caller needs to worry about. This is when we're talking about the broadcasters, we're talking about licensed television over-the-air broadcasters.
All right, let's go to Richard. He's calling us from Chelsea, Michigan. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. I had a quick question about the size of Korea and Indiana. If Korea is the size of Indiana, why isn't Indiana wired up like Korea?
Okay, Richard, thanks. Well, to ask Adam, who made that point.
Well, you know, we have a lot of different states with a lot of different needs, and broadband diffusion is uneven in many of them. Indiana is probably more wired than, say, Wyoming, but it's not going to be as wired as a highly densely populated country like South Korea or a city of Seoul. I mean, the more densely populated the population is in a country or a city or a region, the more likely it is you're going to have faster diffusion. In America, our population is spread out, and uneven networks, you know, that this is the way they spread. It's very uneven in this country. It takes some time.
Well, I think while it is certainly true that the United States has a much larger rural geographic area than South Korea or any Western European country, the fact is that we have about the same percentage of our population living in cities as all of those countries do, and our cities simply are not anywhere close to as wired and as high quality and low cost as the major cities in the rest of the world. That's real money that we're leaving on the table when it comes to our global competitiveness. There's no reason why Chicago and Los Angeles shouldn't be just as wired as Seoul, South Korea, and they're nowhere close. That's the big problem that the FCC was ordered by the Congress to try to solve, and which they've begun in this plan today to get to.
Adam, you mentioned Wyoming. We actually have a caller from Laramie, Wyoming. Brett, thanks for joining us.
Yes. My name is Brett Glass, and I founded long ago the world's first wireless internet service provider, which is, specializes in serving unserved areas. I had a couple of comments. First of all, I wanted to say in response to what Ben said earlier, that in fact there is a lot more competition than most people know about in the United States. There are more than 4,000 small wireless providers like me, and most people don't know that we already serve their neighborhoods. On the other hand, the problem is that if there is more regulation, and Ben's group has been very instrumental in lobbying for very onerous regulation, that would harm small providers like mine, then in fact we would have fewer choices and we wouldn't have the potential to cover a lot of the areas that we have to cover. So I hope that the FCC and Congress will take this into account and make sure that before they regulate, be very careful, because they might actually hurt our global competitiveness by imposing more regulations instead of letting small businesses like mine provide the service.
Now, you're a wireless provider in Laramie?
That's correct.
And how broad is your service? How many households or businesses do you have provide service to?
We have just a little under 1,000 accounts, and we serve Albany County, Wyoming, which is the area surrounding Laramie, where the University of Wyoming is located.
And what kind of speed are you providing?
Our speeds actually can go up to about 54 megabits per second. Most of the customers don't order that, and one of the reasons why is that bandwidth is very expensive here, and only the largest businesses can afford that much. This is another thing which the FCC should be tackling, and hopefully it actually did mention that in the broadband plan.
And for a household, so if I live in Laramie, I want to have a heavier service, how much would it cost me per month?
It would begin at $30 per month. Now, at that price, unfortunately, we could only offer you a speed which is roughly equivalent to DSL. We would love to offer higher speeds, but we have to at least break even on the service, so we have to price it according to how much the bandwidth costs us.
Brett, thank you so much for calling us and offering your perspective. I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. So, Ben, what do you think about what Brett had to say?
Well, I think he'll be pleased to know that the FCC has offered a variety of proposals to help regulate the companies that sell him that expensive bandwidth. Every wireless network ultimately plugs into a wire somewhere, and they feed that, they aggregate that bandwidth, and they push it out in a cloud over their community in order to provide them service. The reason why it's so hard for Brett to offer a reasonable price service is because the companies selling him bandwidth have a virtual monopoly out in the middle of Wyoming. You know, there are a wide variety of small internet service providers in the country, but the fact is that they serve a very, very small percentage of the country. And this plan is mostly focused on the major wireline providers and the major wireless providers that serve the vast majority of customers.
Let's go to Springfield, Virginia, and talk to Greg. Greg, thanks for holding on.
Yes, hi. Is there a possibility of getting the television stations to give us an analog signal once again? Here in the Washington-Baltimore area, we have all kinds of stations that we can no longer get because the digital signal is either a perfect signal or no signal at all. And failing that, maybe we could change the 96 Telecommunication Act. My cable company, by law, cannot give me the Baltimore channels, just the Washington channels.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Greg.
In a word, no. That's not going to happen, that we've made a transition to digital television. We're not going to go back to analog. This was a huge fight, and I don't think there's any chance that we'll see a reemergence of analog television anytime soon.
But on the caller's second point of how do we get more choices on our cable channels, He's right that you can't get the Baltimore channels on Washington cable systems. But as technology evolves and we move to a place where you can get television on the internet and you can get television over cable and you can get a combination, I think we'll move to a place where there's a lot more flexibility and you can have a lot more choice as a consumer. That will require changes in the FCC's regulations on cable television, which hopefully will be in their cable plans sometime in the future.
You know, we have seen such huge changes in the ways Americans are connected to one another and the ways they get information in the last few years. Look, are we going to continue to see this pace of change? Or if looking 5 years down the road or 10 years, is it going to be things that we can't even envision now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, today is the 25th anniversary of the awarding of the very first .com domain address.
The 25th. So that's not very long.
Not very long ago at all. And the FCC's broadband plan kicks off in the preface with a note about like 25 years ago. None of us had ever heard of the internet. We didn't have any connections. Look at how much the world has changed. In the next 5-10 years, that pace of change was just going to accelerate.
Ben, do you agree?
Well, I think that's right. The pace of change in terms of the content and the services that are available to consumers on the internet is dramatically expanding the number of devices that are available to connect to it. But I think there are some things that will remain constant. We will continue to need a wireline infrastructure to connect Americans to the internet. We'll continue to need the public airwaves to be available for wireless connectivity. We'll continue to need to make connections affordable and to give people the training and the computers that they need to get online and take advantage of those services.
Ben Scott is with Free Press. Adam Thier is with the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Thank you both for being with us this hour on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.